Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's April the 23rd, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the president has scolded Congress for not passing a new farm bill and making it acceptable to him. And the CFTC has gotten an earful about three issues in the commodity markets: price discovery, convergence, and credit. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He'll take us all the way through the agricultural weather forecast. It doesn't look pretty for the Midwest over the next 2 weeks. That'll happen in just about 26 minutes. And it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is produced by WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby May Kansas City wheat at $8.72 for the hard red, down 39 cents today. July at 39.5, lower at 872.5. May wheat in Chicago 34 cents lower, $8.17¾. July at 831.5, down 34.5. And December wheat futures at 864.5, down 33.5 cents. May corn futures 587¾ from Chicago, 6.5 lower. July at 601.5, down 6¼. September corn futures 610¼, down 6 cents. And December futures at 612.5, down 6.5. May soybean futures at 1, or rather at 1372. Down 2¾. July at 1385.5, down 4 cents. And the August soybeans 1366.5. Down 12.5 cents. November contract at $12.58, 19 cents lower. May bean meal at $3.51.60, down $3.40. July at $3.56, down $3.70. May bean oil, $61.23, 26 cents higher. July futures up 26 cents as well at $61.96. Live cattle from the CME Group, April contract $91.70, 87.5 cents higher. June futures at $92.87.5, up 77.5. And the April feeders at $101.75. up a nickel for the day. May futures 50 cents higher at 106.57.5. And the May lean hogs at 74.25, up $1.27.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Outside markets for the day: nearby June crude oil at $118.69, up 62 cents a barrel. July futures down 76 cents at $116.50. Ethanol futures trading the May contract at $2.55¼. That's down a penny and 2 cents. June futures at $2.48¾, 2 cents lower for the day. Natural gas at $10.79, up 18 and 3 tenths of a cent. And June futures at $10.95¾, up 19 cents for the day. May propane, these are settlement prices from yesterday, $1.63.5 for that May contract. June futures at $1.64 even. Gold futures, April contract at $906.20 for the day, now trading $16.10 lower. The U.S. dollar at 71.81 is up 0.49 for the day. The CRB index at 421.71, down 0.4. And the NASDAQ is now trading at 2403 for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,751 is just about 31 points higher on this afternoon. Here's what the forecast looks like for the two-state region from our own Mike Sola. He says skies will be clear to partly cloudy. A few showers are possible in southwestern Illinois and around sunset. Lows will range from 48 in northern Indiana to 61 in the western part of Illinois tomorrow. In Illinois, to be partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Those will be most numerous from the west central parts of the state through northern Illinois. In Indiana, partly to mostly sunny tomorrow. Highs will range from 70 in the north to 82 in the south. The extended forecast calling for much cooler conditions to start out next week, with frost possible in northern and central sections on Monday and Tuesday morning. Temps are expected to moderate for the second half of next week, with a return to some heavy rain focused on portions of the Midwest.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
On a Wednesday afternoon, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, joins us to take a look at the commodity markets and what's been happening in the futures. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon. It's a beautiful day in Oakland, Illinois.
It is a beautiful day. Did you happen to see any of yesterday's CFTC hearings in Washington or hear about them? They took up three topics primarily: convergence, price discovery, and credit.
Yeah. I did read the Wall Street Journal article. It was well written, and then I read the DTN deal, and I thought the articles that came out of it were very interesting, and they hit the point covered the points very clearly.
Indeed, and we'll take that up more here on the closing market report and put it in our letter as well. I talked to Gene Kunda, who is a professor here on campus, was out and made a presentation this morning for about 16 minutes. So we'll put that all in the newsletter, and you'll hear more about that as the week passes right here on this radio station. But we should talk about the commodity markets today. Over the last couple of days, we've had a down day in the market that continued with corn and soybeans in Chicago today.
Yeah, the easy commodity to talk about is wheat, and we understand that the government is selling some of the trust inventory of wheat and buying canned goods. It's almost an unrelenting story on CNBC about the high-priced rice, and of course they're even quoting 100 million people in the world that with these higher energy prices and shortages of food out there, and wheat and rice could possibly have starvation in the world. One of the big things that we did see here in Oakland, the first thing they want to know about is the weather forecast, and it looks pretty wet to us, and it's still going to be wet. There's definitely some planting going on in the Midwest. The second thing, we did see a lot of people getting out of May options today, and we did see some trading. But one of the things that we did notice and continue to notice is the strength on the old crop soybeans versus the new crop. And, of course, as this planting goes forth, we do think that there will be acorn planted, but we still will end up, with a slight acreage increase, but not a big bulge like we saw last year. I know there's people out there that want to see a big bulge in extra acres. We don't sense it, and we think the weather will possibly even also keep that acreage from ballooning higher in corn.
And then you'd be referring, of course, to the May being down 2 3/4, but November down 19 cents. That on the idea that if the corn planters don't roll very soon, there'll be a lot more of those acres that would have switched stayed in soybeans, right?
That's right. And also we're seeing this basic concept that we still have a very small carryover of old crop beans. And if there's any shipping problems out of South America, that demand will come to the U.S. And once those beans are shipped, our carryover will actually get smaller. The Chinese, since October, have been on a buying binge that's almost unprecedented in the modern times. They've increased the demand of soybeans, and, of course, the export facilities in South America are shipping beans out as rapidly as they can. Now, some of the topics and commentary was that the Argentine soybean processor and also the exporters in Argentina have some inventory, but if there is a strike down there, basically the only market that does have shipping and exporting capacity is the U.S. So that's a concern in the marketplace, and at the same time, cash buyers are saying that buying old crop beans are harder to come by, particularly east of the Mississippi, and that's also giving the old crop soybean market some stability in relation to some of the other markets.
Are you a willing seller of any old crop at all today?
No, not at all under those circumstances, because I think that it's one of the most bullish items we could see if that 100 and 60 million carryover would all of a sudden be 120 or 130, it would give new explosiveness to the marketplace. Even though the livestock producer seems to be hurting here in the U.S., re-importing beans from South America at some point in time, whenever the labor situation or the farm situation gets under control. But one of the things that's the precedent here, and it's scary, the Argentine farmers being taxed a lot of money on their production, and it's probably the biggest disincentive to increase additional acreage in Argentina because the government's high taxes, and it's a very strong disincentive to expand acreage or improve their production at all when the government's taxing these poor guys as much as they are. So it's a big disincentive, and it is a restrictive flow, and they're not even exporting wheat yet at the present time. And as a result of that, that's a big economic loss that nobody else to blame but the Argentine government.
Any final word from you before I let you go?
Have a profitable day, Todd.
You too. That's Paul Cooley, ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report, happens each and every Wednesday.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from your land and land grant institution, the University of Illinois. Dave Dickey is here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, President George Bush, in a written statement yesterday, says he is disappointed that Congress has yet to produce an acceptable farm bill. Senate Agriculture Committee and Farm Bill Conference Committee Chairman Tom Harkin read from the president's statement to Farm Bill conferees.
Record farm income, now is not the time for Congress to ask other sectors of the economy to pay higher taxes in order to increase the size of government. The proposal would increase spending by at least $16 billion, masked in part by budgetary gimmicks and funded in part by additional tax revenues. These tax revenue provisions are unacceptable.
Bush yesterday called on Congress to pass a one-year extension of the 2002 Farm Bill. That did not sit well with key Farm Bill negotiators, including House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson and Senate Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Saxby Chambliss.
A one-year extension is a bad idea.
I agree that one-year extension, two-year extension, whatever may be floated around out there, is not the way to go.
Harkin also dismissed the president's statement, but acknowledged Congress needs to act. In Harkin's words, we are getting to the point when time is definitely running out, and we have to reach some type of agreement one way or the other. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission got an earful at a public hearing yesterday on whether futures are broken when it comes to price discovery and risk management. Stuart Doan reports.
Sky-high grain futures prices are attracting non-traditional investors, such as index funds, hedge funds, pension funds, and other deep-pocketed investors. That's led to record volume in these markets. While acknowledging that corn and soybean basis levels are at least twice as wide as usual, CFTC economists stated that the agency doesn't believe financial investors are driving up prices or volatility. Memphis cotton merchant Billy Donovan begged to differ.
I go back to March 4th and cotton traded from $84.95 till synthetically to $1.09. That makes no sense. The market is broken.
Gary Niemeyer of the National Corn Growers Association proposed that big speculators should no longer have the same margin requirements as traditional commercial hedgers.
To be classified as a hedger, the entity must have a cash position. Somewhere within the company, they must be buying or selling cash grain to retain the hedger classification. We believe this will have a very limited impact on the market liquidity.
American Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman argued many of these new investors have little or no understanding of the traditional role of the agricultural markets.
Well, and what is happening as we've diverged from a market that was fundamentally based on supply and demand fundamentals over the years and now being used as an investment vehicle, that the dynamics of that market have changed to the point that the tool is fundamentally no longer there for the average producer.
Stuart Doan, Washington.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks much, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website, the address, willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, we'll talk about burn down with Aaron Hager. Aaron Hager joins us in studio to talk about burn down as it pertains to this growing season. He's a weed scientist at the University of Illinois. Aaron, thanks for taking the time today.
Well, certainly, Todd. Pleasure to be with you today.
Burn down's the topic that you'll be taking up in this week's version of the bulletin. It can be found on the IPM website at ipm.uiuc.edu for complete and thorough details. What's the gist of the article?
The gist of the article is the different types of burndown options that no-till farmers have. And we see quite a bit of interest this year, especially as we'll get into soybean planting season in a few weeks, to include some of the residual products back onto the acres. Concerns this year, of course, would be, well, here we are in getting toward the end of April with less corn in the ground than what many farmers have become accustomed to the last several years. So one concern that we have now is there may be some tendency for farmers to perhaps want to plant first and then worry about the burn down after they plant. And certainly it's a viable thing to do. But again, we just want to make sure that folks are aware that ideally we should be putting all the seed into a very clean field without any existing vegetation in there. Any time that we'll plant into stands of existing winter annuals or even some of the earlier season summer annuals, we do increase the risk of seeing some effects on the ultimate crop yield quite a bit earlier in the year than what we normally do if we would plant into a more stale seedbed.
And the 2 weeks are calling for rainfall steady in parts of the Midwest. That pushes us back to the 1st of May. Probably could get a buggy across a lot of the fields. I don't know that there'll be a lot, that the ground will be saturated, but certainly won't be able to plant. Would that be your preference for getting this done, to take advantage of this time to put a burn down, and is that possible?
I think if farmers are able or could actually have any of the fields treated now before the next round of precipitation comes in, especially, again, on the no-till acres, I think they'll be very, very wise to consider doing that. We've got a lot of effective products. We've got some intervals that need to be satisfied with some products between when they're applied and actually then when the seed is put into the ground. So if we have fields that maybe, you know, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks out from planting, now would be a good time to try to put something on those fields, try to get some of these winter annuals and early summer annuals under control.
And what kinds of things are we going to put down? What specifically are you looking at in way of burn downs and premixes?
One of the more common ones that's over the last several years has been simply glyphosate without any tank mix partners with it. Been very effective. We can obviously adjust the rates, play with those rates as we need to according to the spectrum of the weeds and their size. However, we do now have some populations of certain weeds in Illinois that are resistant to glyphosate, things like mare's tail or horseweed and water hemp. So if we would go and try to burn down these fields with, say, just glyphosate, and we do have instances of these resistant biotypes, we're not going to control them very effectively. So 2,4-D-type tank mix partners would be a very, very good option, especially for farmers to consider this year.
And are there other things that they need to think about with that glyphosate if they have a resistant weed or they think they have a resistant weed?
Certainly the one thing to keep in mind is that whatever the spectrum of weeds would be, the resistant weeds that are resistant to glyphosate, they're not going to be controlled, hence they're going to continue to be competitive with the crop once it does actually emerge. So any kind of a tank mix partner specific for the ones of concern, for example, giant ragweed, horseweed, or mare's tail, and water hemp, would be very, very advisable for especially going into this planting season.
I've heard you say it not quite this way before, but farmers have gotten a bit lazy with glyphosate on the idea that weeds aren't competitive, that they're just to be controlled, and really weeds are competitive, and farmers need to attack them in that way, don't they?
They're certainly one of the most aggressive adversaries that the row crops in the state of Illinois have every given year. And we can simply control weeds quite well with glyphosate, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we don't need to think about how we better manage the weeds in the cropping systems that we do have. The only thing that weeds really do to a crop year in and year out is reduce the yield. There's very little positive aspects of weeds competing with crops, so the sooner we can keep these weeds managed, keep them away from the crop, get rid of them out of the crop, ultimately by the end of the year, the better off the crop is going to be.
Thanks much, Aaron.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it.
Aaron Hager is a weed scientist at the University of Illinois. You can read his article on weeds this week at ipm.uiuc.edu. Just click on bulletin or look for IPM and University of Illinois in your Google search engine.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. Time to take a look at the cash grain market here on the Closing Market Report. Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us this afternoon. Hi, Kay.
Hi, Todd.
It's a beautiful day outside.
Gorgeous. Absolutely beautiful.
Farmers able to move in your area yet?
The clay ground is still, you know, just really pretty tacky. There's some guys running on sand. There's some anhydrous down. Park County's a little loamier than we are. They're about 40 miles north of here, and there's been a lot of planting going on up there. So it just depends on the area, but we've still got a long way to go, Todd.
And how is basis holding up through this week?
Since the farmers are busy concentrating on something else besides moving corn, train levels have improved a little bit. We added 6 cents to our basis today, which helps a little bit. So basis levels are improving, and the more the farmers concentrate on planting, I think the better they will get.
Indeed. And will you be in contact, very close contact with many farmers as they get through the planting season? I know you talk to a lot of them during the off season, but how do cell phones help out much as you get through this planting season?
It really does. And, you know, I try not to bother them too much, but a lot of times they'll call to see what the markets are doing, but I make a tape every night with the markets and why the market went up or down or whatever. So they kind of rely on that probably more than they do calling me. So I don't really have an awful lot of contact with them, Todd.
And your feeling about this marketplace at this point, is there more upside potential left?
You know, for some reason, this market is very jittery. I mean, we've proven that in corn. They just for some reason don't want to do one way or the other right now. This meeting yesterday got a lot of press. You're seeing a lot of letting the tariffs on the imports of ethanol go away in January of 2009, and all this famine that you're seeing around the country, silent tsunami or whatever. I think this is going to eventually impact this market. When or how much remains to be seen.
And your expectations for basis over the coming week?
I think basis levels are going to continue and improve as the farmers stay in the fields.
Okay, and your bids for the day?
All right, our cash corn is 568, cash beans are 1336, and new wheat is 622.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Wednesday. You can hear what Kay had to say and what most of the analysts here on the station had to say right there on our website. The address is WILLAG.org. About half an hour after we get through with the shows, we post them to the website. You can listen to Commodity Week and the Closing Market Report and other agricultural programming anytime you'd like. You can even set it up as a podcast at willag.org. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
It's St. George's Day, patron of farmers. George was born to a Christian family during the late 3rd century. Eventually, he was martyred after refusing to participate in the persecution of Christians across the Roman Empire. George was sainted in 496. On this day in agricultural history in 1856, Granville T. Woods was born. Among Wood's inventions was an electric incubator for hatching chickens. In 1981, artificial skin was first transplanted in the U.S. on patients at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. The combination of cowhide, shark cartilage, and plastic was developed by a research team at MIT. This material makes possible the treatment of burn patients whose injuries might otherwise be fatal. In 1985, Coca-Cola announced it was changing its 99-year-old secret formula. New Coke, though, was a big flop. In 1992, the first McDonald's in Beijing, China, opened. It is the world's largest McDonald's with 28,000 square feet, seating for 701,000 employees. And in 1993, Cesar Chavez died. He was the founder of the United Farm Workers Union. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest.
Well, I just don't know where to begin. We've got quite a mess out there, I think, over the next 10 days. A lot of mixed weather, actually. It's going to be good for some areas and not so great for others. I think we have two waves of precipitation coming, followed by a shot of cold air. And then a warm front bringing warmer air back in, and the bottom line is for the next week or so, we're still going to be looking at periodic rainfall across the region that will keep us from seeing aggressive planting progress in quite a few areas. The first wave of rain is expected to get underway in the western Corn Belt. Actually, it's already happening in some areas out there in the western fringe of the region here this afternoon. And those thunderstorms will continue impacting the western Corn Belt all the way into Friday morning. And meanwhile, we'll cross those thunderstorms into the eastern Midwest as we get into the day tomorrow and continue the precipitation into Saturday morning. Now, the rain amounts that occur with this first wave will probably run a good quarter to three-quarters of an inch in many areas. We'll probably see some local amounts over an inch or so. The wettest weather is actually going to be in the upper portions of the Midwest with this first round. Minnesota, parts of Nebraska, maybe portions of Wisconsin will be pretty wet. And there will probably be a few locations in the Ohio River Valley that will also get quite a bit of moisture. The next round of precipitation actually looks a little bit weaker at midday today. And one of the reasons why it looks a little bit weaker is because there's greater amount of cold air coming southward out of Canada. That is not necessarily great news. The cold air will settle into the heart of the Midwest on Tuesday and Wednesday mornings, and we'll see frost reaching back into central Indiana, central Illinois, parts of northern Ohio, maybe even a couple of frosts, or I'm sorry, freezes that will occur into the northern portions of those states. So we will be faced with some cooler weather that will likely slow down the drying rates. It might give us a little break in the precipitation, but eventually a warm front is going to develop, and we'll be seeing more precipitation evolve with that warm front. And then we'll be back into the seesaw of some periodic showers in the second week of the two-week outlook. I do think conditions will get better from May 5th through the 15th. But, you know, every time we get on the air here, it seems like we push back the better conditions by another few days, and it's really going to be tough for us to accomplish what we need to get done.
May 5th through the 15th seems an awful long way away. When you say aggressive, that planting, I suppose, that leaves some open tracks for a few producers to be able to get in. If you had to put a percentage across the farm and the Midwest, what kind of look of dry enough soils to put something in the ground would you say? It's almost like asking you what's the percentage of rainfall coverage going to be, but what's the percentage of planting going to be like and where people can get in?
Well, I think over this first week of the forecast, we're probably not going to see anything more than maybe 20-25% of the region having favorable conditions, either because it's raining or because it's wet. In the second week, though, of the two-week outlook, we'll probably see that increase to something closer to 45, maybe 50% of the region. I see the wettest conditions shifting to the north in that second week with better conditions in the Ohio River Valley, the Delta, and the lower Missouri River Valley.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us for the day.
Well, thank you, and have a good afternoon.
You too. Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That's today's Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.